From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. We're closing in on the 90th day of the legislative session. Usually lawmakers would be packing up to go home by now, but leadership has budgeted for 100 days, and who knows, it could go longer. Lots of rank-and-file legislators say leadership has been lacking in both chambers, and we'll ask our guest today about that after he introduces himself.
I'm Russ Jennings, state representative of the 122nd District from Lakin, Kansas.
And it's a pleasure to have Russ Jennings join us again, and an equal pleasure to have my Kansas News Service bunkie, Jim McLean, back with us as well. Jim, good morning.
Hi, Sam.
First, an update on the cat, Mr. Boots, and how are your four kids doing?
Four kids are doing great. Boots is still with us, so life is good in the Jennings family.
Out there in Lakin, Kansas.
That's right.
Tell me where Lakin is again.
Lakin has turned into the snow belt of western Kansas most recently. It's about 25 miles west of Garden City.
So people are starting to do like cross-country skiing and stuff?
Yeah, if we just had a little more slope to our hills, yeah, that could happen.
You know, Sam, I don't think some of your Johnson County listeners believe there really is 25 miles to go west of Garden City before you hit like Colorado.
A lot of your Johnson County listeners believe western Kansas starts at Quivira Road. So we're trying to educate them here.
I think eastern Colorado Springs.
Yeah, it's just like that.
All right, let's get going. Jim, your first question for our representative from Lakin.
You know, you're approaching the 90th day. You set 100 days as the absolute limit for this session. And I'm sure most of you don't want to go past that. But there's a pivotal tax vote recently. There was one early in the session. There was one recently, a tax bill that seemed to be an appropriate compromise, and yet it failed by four votes in the Senate. You didn't have a hand in that. But where does that put you now in terms of balancing the budget, raising money for schools, and ending the session?
Well, it's not a complete reset, but it certainly sets us back. If the tax bill that was in the Senate had passed, it likely would have passed the House. The governor undoubtedly would have vetoed it, and I'm pretty confident if we pass another tax bill and we need to do an override, that will occur.
So they're only going to get, but the tax bills are going to get smaller from here. Is that your prediction? Because this one seemed to raise enough to cover the $900 million projected deficit. With a little bit left over.
The dynamics in both the House and Senate are so different this year from what they've been the past 4 years. I think it's very difficult to predict with any certainty what the outcome will be.
I want to continue with that thread, but want to just go back and get your opinion on this tax bill. You said that, and Jim mentioned that it would certainly cover the deficit, have a little bit left over. But the concern seemed to be, would there be enough money to put into public education that would satisfy the state Supreme Court? Do you think that that plan would have put enough money into public education?
It would have gone a long way towards doing that. And I would suggest, I listened to the Senate debate yesterday on the floor. I think Senator Denning made it very clear that the potential was it may not be enough, but that didn't mean that all options were then off the table. And if there was a need to revisit taxes or other fees in order to raise funds to meet an education budget, we would do so.
So you would be okay with a couple of bills that would raise taxes? You would, in your world, you'd move this tax bill. If you needed more money for education, you'd come back and you'd do that in a separate piece of legislation.
Well, there's an opportunity with this tax bill to roll back the tax cuts that have so negatively affected the state, eliminate the trigger, restore some deductions for health costs for taxpayers. And yes, you know, you build this one brick at a time. To think that maybe there's one all-encompassing tax bill that takes care of everything is probably not realistic in this environment. This would have brought stability to the state general fund as it exists today, taking care of some of public education costs. And perhaps we would have had to have done some more work or some juggling on the budget to make it all balance out.
Well, and I don't want to get too far into the political weeds, Sam, but I think you could play this any number of different ways. First of all, I don't understand strategically why people would want two tax votes, because then you're voting for two tax increases. It just seems. But the other thing is, and I think the conservatives in the Republican conservatives who are hoping in to regain the strength they lost in the last election would like to see as many tax votes as possible, because they're not going to vote for any of them. They're going to postcard all of them. And yet, it does seem too that the Democrats. Only seven of the nine Senate Democrats, you know, two of the nine Senate Democrats voted in favor of the tax bill. Seven voted against it, saying they're just not sure that it did contain enough money for schools. Strategically, I think I heard you say that you think that they overplayed their hand on that vote?
I think so a bit. And I have a concern with that and their position at this point. the Democrats could very well sit back and do nothing and require essentially that there be a Republican solution. Well, clearly, if there is exclusively a Republican solution, it's going to be veering far more to the right and be less overall, in my mind, less satisfactory in meeting needs. For them, then, the Republicans didn't fix it. Republicans can't govern. I would suggest, rather, that, you know, the coalition building that's been ongoing through this session between moderate Republicans, Democrats, and on the other side, on the right issues with more conservative Republicans, that's a healthy environment. But to kind of overplay the hand and suggest that we're going to roll back entirely the 2012 tax plan and restore everything as it was, that's not achievable. We're in an environment where it requires 84 votes and 27, not 63.
So that you can override should you need to.
Absolutely, yeah.
So how much damage did the vote in the Senate do to this emerging coalition that everybody's been kind of looking at since the beginning of the session? What I'm speaking about there is the moderate Republican / Democratic coalition, the quote-unquote governing coalition on these tax issues. Did that take a hit?
Oh, I think so. I mean, sure. Now you have unreliable partners. There's no reason not to vote for that bill. Not really. Not if you're really serious about getting an 80-yard gain. You know, to put it in football terms, we had an 80-yard plan there. There still would have been some work to do, no doubt, either on the budget or tax side. And rather than take that you can get, they left it on the table, and I think that's unfortunate. So now the moderates have a choice. Do we continue to try to find what's the sweet spot that we can go with Democrats, or do we go over more to the conservative side and say, well, okay, what's your idea? Let's hear that.
All right. I want to just one more football metaphor. So you thought that you were in the red zone before, ready to score, ready to take this across the goal line. So if you were on the 20-yard line before, where are you now?
Wow, that's great. I don't know that we're at midfield now. I think we got set back quite a ways yesterday.
That did sound a little bit like a threat, though, Sam. I mean, a posturing kind of threat. In other words, okay, you guys, meaning the Democrats, you didn't go along with this reasonable plan. Therefore, we have no choice now but to go over and start negotiating with the conservatives. But are there people on the conservative side of things that are prepared to vote for any tax increase at all? I mean, I know what they say. They say, yeah, a reasonable tax increase coupled with some spending cuts. How difficult would that be to achieve?
Only one way to find out. Run a bill and see who votes. That's at the end of the day, all of the promises, all of the suggestions, yeah, we'll get on board. We want to be a part of the solution. We have a plan. Fine. Let's see it. Let's vote on it.
Do you think that the leadership, certainly Speaker Reichman and President Weigel, are out of touch with their bodies? Do you think that they are more conservative than the rank and file, and this has led to some of the problems in getting legislation through?
I think it's more complicated in the Senate because the Senate president has announced her intent to run for Congress. So her political calculations are, in my mind, a bit different than perhaps Speaker Reichman. But I can say that with Ron, he totally understands the unusual circumstance that he finds himself in. He does not have a block of 63 votes to get anything done. Dealing with a governor who, in many ways, is obstructing the process. You know, this business, the rhetoric of the governor in the past about the legislature has the duty to appropriate and they've got to come in and balance the budget. Two columns on that appropriation. There's a revenue stream. There's an expenditure stream. We've given him the opportunity to simply allow something that had tremendous numbers become law, and he chose not to.
Well, I think evidence, Sam and Russ, of the speaker's kind of governing style, I think there's evidence of that in things, you know, like the Medicaid expansion vote, for instance. That's an issue that had been literally bottled up and not allowed to reach the floor for several years. And it came to the floor. It passed the House by a wide margin, as it did the Senate. You all didn't have, I think you came up, two votes short, or maybe two votes short in the Senate and a few more in the House of overriding the governor's veto of that bill. So I think that's an indication of what you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. We're being allowed to have the debate. The issues come up. They go across the floor. We have the debate. That's something that Ron and I both promised as we were running for Speaker, that we would allow that to return to the Kansas House. And I think that creates a much healthier environment when people don't feel as if they have been stifled. Now, in my mind, the balance is now a bit different. You don't want someone who overwhelms you with their leadership in a forceful, you know, arm-twisting, arm-breaking way But I think we're rapidly reaching a point where the speaker will have to assert himself in a thoughtful but perhaps more firm way than he has to move some votes in a direction that we can achieve some level of compromise and pass a tax bill. We don't get out of here until we have a tax bill, a budget bill, and an education bill, and those are big, hard things to get done.
And since I brought it up, the Medicaid expansion issue, let's put a cap on that. I know there was some thought that the folks who desperately want to see that pass were going to make another attempt in the veto session, which we're now in. But we had Majority Leader Heineman say a few weeks ago that he didn't think there was going to be another attempt in the House. As things progress here towards the end of the session, is that your judgment as well?
I expect that's right. And it's become more complicated with action in D.C., with the repeal and replace activities that have gone on there. It's so much in flux now. I think it's probably on the table until next year at the earliest, and may be resolved by Congress before then.
Yeah, just as a note, that bill in D.C. Says that states that have not expanded their Medicaid programs by March 1st, in other words, retroactively a couple months ago, won't be able to do it. Again, that bill's only passed. The U.S. House hasn't. The Senate is expected to make big changes in it, but that's where it stands now.
One of the strongest arguments I thought that existed to expand was we would put ourselves at a disadvantaged place for the future if we didn't get it done, and that's exactly appears to be what's playing out.
Rush, you seem to suggest that you're going to need a little bit more leadership from the speaker, maybe from the majority leader, as we get deeper and deeper and deeper, and who knows how many more deeps I could put in there. are we looking at another end of the session of late night tears on the floor, people being taken into the woodshed by the speaker? Is this just going to turn into just a regular end of the session 4 a.m. vote?
3 years ago, the governor spoke to the Republican caucus and shed a few tears during that presentation. We went on out. We then passed a sales tax bill, not something I voted for. A couple of other members shed a few more tears. We can avoid the tearful outbursts by all if we're open to the idea that compromise involves giving something. We have 40 new members in the House that are very idealistic about their work. They haven't yet experienced an entire session and what goes on. And you could sense in the chamber this week that it's beginning to get a different atmosphere. You can actually feel it. It's palpable. Mm. It's coming. So the pressure's building. They have ran on a platform of we're going to raise your taxes, we're going to expand Medicaid, we're going to take care of roads, we're going to protect CAPERS and all these great things, and we won't be able to do all of those things. And when they get to the point of realization, I think then the potential really for a Republican solution to the exclusion of the Democrats becomes much more viable. And I believe they're getting closer every day.
Speaking of roads, in the next two fiscal years, 18 and 19, you're going to take more than $1 billion still from the Kansas Department of Transportation, crippling that highway program, and as I understand it, leaving only a relative pittance for actually regular maintenance on the 10,000-mile state highway system over the next couple of years. But there's a gas tax bill that's been introduced. Most people say that doesn't have much of a chance of passing, given all the other taxes you might have to consider. But there's a provision in the budget bill, both the House and the Senate, that would allow KDOT to issue another $400 million in bonds just to pay for maintenance. So you look at you're looking at the prospect now of borrowing money to do regular maintenance on the highways. How does that strike you?
Not a new event. It occurred now. I don't think it's a great idea. Not a new event. It occurred a couple of years ago in December, $400 million worth of bonds issued. It's interesting. It's the same number. But here's what I think is a solution that allows KDOT to increase their bond authority a few cents on gasoline tax, create the revenue stream that can service the bond debt, increase the percentage ratio of revenue to debt service to a still reasonable amount, 22-23% rather than 18, and put in a requirement that any bonds that are issued for a term of for a project, whatever that project might be, that the term of the bond can't exceed the expected lifespan of the project that's being completed. So if you have an 8-year expectation on an overlay, you can't have bond debt taking care of that unless the bond term is 8 years or less.
And that increases the cost of the bond, of course.
Well, of course it does. But it also creates a sense of fiscal discipline. We are then not transferring current expenditures to future generations in the way that has been done in the past. It just – it contains it. And I think that KDOT could manage that in a way to do many things and would open up lots of opportunities for new work and get some jobs going again in Kansas for our contractors and improve our roads for the people of the state. But the legislature has a long history of lacking, in the end, in truth, lacking fiscal discipline. And these are the kinds of things that you can do that keep it contained in a way that I think is prudent, and especially now. We don't want to borrow money to pay the light bill next month. Can we borrow money for highways? Sure, but only, in my mind, to the extent of the term of the project meeting up with the term of the bond.
When I go to my coffees with my state legislator, who is Stephanie Clayton from Overland Park, I'm always surprised, and I've been to several during the session, of how much the talk turns to guns on campus, guns in state hospitals. I always thought that they would be more interested in taxes, education funding, but guns seem to be one of the dominant topics at these coffees. And I'm wondering if you think that we're going to see a gun rescission bill rolling back part of that that law come to the floor.
Interesting. I know the Senate has included a proviso in their budget proposal that takes care of the state hospitals in this regard. Provisos are not a good way to legislate. In my mind, you face the issues head on. I don't think we'll see a bill come across the floor at this point in time on that issue. It may end up being something by a proviso. You know, a fallback position would be a one-year delay to allow some more consideration. Because look what happened in the last month. The governor offers his budget adjustments, and what's he include? Over 2 years, $24 million to provide for statutorily required security measures at state psychiatric hospitals. No one on the planet can possibly think it's a good idea to have guns floating around on psychiatric wards for people who have been determined to be seriously mentally ill and present a danger to themselves and or others. This just defies any logic. So I think the governor acknowledged that through asking for that money. We'll meet the law. We're not going to give him $24 million to do that. That's a ridiculous waste of money, not for the sake of bringing guns into a state psychiatric hospital.
So you think that and perhaps KU Med Center and Hospital, you think that might be a carve-out that comes to the floor that might pass?
I don't think so, but I would suggest that if we have the time, and you would think maybe people were looking ahead, but I think we should look at what some other states have done in this area. Texas, for instance, when they passed a constitutional carry law, very similar to us, permanently exempted hospitals up front. And you know, the rhetoric comes from the NRA on this. Well, somehow they did it in Texas. They didn't get beat up by the NRA over it. So why would Kansas necessarily have to be any different?
So just to be clear on what you're saying, you think, and if you heard talk in the state house as you approach the end of the session, that what might happen then is some sort of a proviso that puts delays the effective date of this law for one more year just to give you some more time? Do you think that's possible?
That would be my solution at this point.
But you haven't.
Time.
There's not a lot of talk about that.
I've not heard a lot of talk about that.
I want to wrap it up with a little national politics. Wait a minute. I see Jim McLean.
No, you go ahead, but I have one question if you
take your last question.
My last question. Well, it's just we haven't talked about this for a while, but as you know, more than a month ago, reports surfaced that Governor Brownback had taken a position with United Nations and was going to be leaving Kansas. And not much has been said about that since. But as a legislator who's in participating in these negotiations and maybe has had a chance to deal with the governor on an issue or two, what is your sense as to whether he is going to finish his term here or maybe planning to leave early?
Well, the hall talk, if you will, and probably from reasonably reliable sources, although it's a bit like junior high over there in that Capitol building at times, there's a strong suspicion that the governor will ultimately resign before the end of his term, that he's trying to get things cleaned up a bit so that the lieutenant governor doesn't have a lot of heavy lifting to do when he would then take office. A lot of speculation that that plan may involve the month of June, given the progress the legislature's making and the likelihood that we go on. I guess I wouldn't reserve a U-Haul right now, but I think he's probably going on his way out.
When do you think you're going to wrap up? End of May, June?
I expect that we will see some discussion about the fact that June the 12th is the first day of the first payroll period of the next fiscal year that's chargeable to the next fiscal year. We experienced this a few years ago. I would expect in the next couple of days we'll see some legislation to assure that all state employees are determined to be essential so that there is no potential for them to be furloughed during a what otherwise might be described as a government shutdown. Since I believe that may well be the case, I would suggest it's past June the 12th, and that's quite possible.
When you joined us back in October, it was before the election, and I asked you two questions. One, would you vote to retain the state Supreme Court justices, and who your pick for president was, and I want to revisit those right now. I'm going to assume that you voted both to retain and for President Trump. So are you, given now that we've seen the Gannon decision, are you pleased with your vote to retain those Supreme Court justices?
Absolutely.
What about Donald Trump?
Not so much.
You know, at the time in October, you suggested that the Clinton emails were giving you a little bit of spilkus in your innards. And now, given what we've learned just kind of like hour after hour, frankly, I need to admit that I can't keep up with the news. Are you feeling that unease about President Trump and worry and rethinking your vote?
Recent termination of the director of the FBI under the circumstances that exist with ongoing investigations reminds me of the days of Nixon. I am very disappointed to see that event occur. I think there's been some things that the president's done that are fine. I think he's definitely a business-oriented guy, and we can do some good with job creation and maybe strengthening our economy. But I get worried about an individual who has that kind of power becomes a focus of an investigation, and he fires the investigator. It just looks terrible. The optics are just terrible.
You're still in his corner for right now?
Oh, a little reserve judgment at this point. We'll see how it goes over the next 3 months.
Russ Jennings, you are an honest man, and it is a pleasure always to have you here. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp, and today we recorded the podcast in KCUR's Topeka studio, which is right across the street from the Capitol. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast. Do you have that NPR One app? If so, search for us in Explore, and then click subscribe. You can also find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. You can follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff. And my co-host Brian Ellison on Statehouse Blend Missouri is at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff, and I'll see you around the radio.